this is Chaz Palminteri, and I'm talking with Rabbi Saul Solomon on Dave's Gone By.
Shalom, shalom, hello. Is this Chaz Palminteri, please?
Yes, it is.
Well, shalom to you, and shalom, my friends, here on this radio program. This is Rabbi Saul Solomon, the founder and spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And I am very excited and thrilled to be talking to this actor, this man who was on Broadway and off Broadway in A Bronx Tale. Robert De Niro loved it so much, he made a movie out of it that's making a big hit, and Chaz Palminteri has appeared in such films since then as The Usual Suspects. He was an Oscar nominee for Bullets Over Broadway. He won a 1996 Leadership Entertainment Award from a bunch of Italians who gave him all that, and also another Italian award in Washington, D.C. that he got from President Clinton. So it is an honor and a joy for me to talk with Chaz Palminteri. Shalom to you. Welcome.
Shalom. How are you?
I'm doing all right. And how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Good. Good. Now, one of the reasons that we're talking is that you are bringing back your show, A Bronx Tale, which my good friend Dave saw on Broadway a few years ago and loved it. He thought it was a wonderful show. So you're bringing it back again to our area. You've done it for so many years. What is special about continuing to do it at this stage?
Well, you know, Rabbi, after I brought it back in 2007 on Broadway, an immense hit, like it was when I first did it in 1989. So, and then I did the national tour where I did 42 cities all over America. And after 42 cities and people loving it, standing ovations every time, I just decided, gee, why should I stop? So now I just do it. I only do maybe 15, 16 dates a year. And I go to Vegas a lot. I was the number one show in I was voted number one show in Las Vegas in 2009.
Wow.
I've never done it in Brooklyn. Then when the Brooklyn Performing Arts Center asked me to come in and do it there, I said, you know what, that'd be great. So I'll be there.
Right, and it's kind of in your neck of the woods. You live in Bedford, and Brooklyn is not so far away. But I am curious about you. You mentioned that you did 42 cities on that tour. Do you have any great memories or anecdotes of touring with that show?
Well, the thing that was amazing was that, you know, here I'm doing this story about this young boy who grew up in the Bronx who saw this killing when he was a kid, and it didn't matter where I was. People just loved it. I was in Texas. I did Houston, Austin, Dallas. I went into the Midwest, you know, Ohio, anywhere. People love this story, and they related to it. And it's really, because I think it's really about wasted talent, and it's about people, you know, it's the archetype characters that I wrote, not knowing when I did it. But people, it's the father, the mother, the son, the person, the boy wanting to be a man, going between who was right, the father or Sonny. And I think it just connects with people. It's a huge hit in Japan.
In Japan?
In Japan. Figure that out. I can't explain it. The movie's a hit all over the world.
True.
And the play is the same. So I really, look, I'm just blessed. And I go, I don't know why, but I'm blessed. And so every time I go, all right, you know what, I'm going to put it away. They called my agent and said, please, could he come in and do here? Could he come in and do that? And I do. I mean, look, it's very lucrative for me because I own the show. And so I say, okay, let's do it. So I'm really looking forward to doing Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn, those people. But let me ask, when you did it in Vegas, I read somewhere that you had to get used to a little bit people talking back to the stage and calling out, and because it's a different kind of an audience. How do you deal with those moments of someone kind of breaking your flow?
Yeah, that doesn't happen too often. It did happen in the beginning in Las Vegas. But what I did was I just incorporated them in the show, and I just said something funny, and then they shut up right away, so it was okay. It worked out really well. But that doesn't happen too often anymore.
Well, no, I would hope not. It's not supposed to happen, but you get audiences that go to the theater and they're drunk once every 5 years. It's not a New York audience, as it were.
Exactly. But for some reason, the way the show starts, it gets them to know right away, this is not a stand-up comic, this is not the tits and ass, this is not something that you're going to see in Vegas, this is something different, and they kind of,
Well, personally, I miss the tits and ass, but I can see that in another show.
Okay, exactly.
Which talking with Chaz Palminteri here, and when I'm also going to ask you, this is your story, it's autobiographical. Was it cathartic? Was this something that you just felt you physically compelled, had to write and perform when you were doing it? And when you did it, did you feel like, oh, there was this weight on my shoulders of witnessing this crime when I was 9 years old?
Not really, no? Rabbi. I got to be honest with you. I wasn't traumatized by it. People go, oh, my God, you were nine. You must have been traumatized. I don't know why, but I really wasn't. Now, did I think about it a lot as I'm growing up? Yeah, it would come into my mind. Obviously, I wrote about it when I was a young man. So, yeah, it did stay in my mind a lot. And I always thought it was a story that would be interesting, you know? And then one day when... the way it happened was,
yeah,
I was, and I'll do it a quick.
No, take your time. This is wonderful.
Oh, what happened was I was a struggling actor. I went out to L.A. Then I went out to L.A. You know, I did theater in New York, and everybody knows you don't make much money doing theater. So then I went out to L.A. and I got hot right away. I did Hill Street Blues and Matlock, and I did a bunch of shows there. And then finally, after about 2 years in L.A., I did all the shows, and I started running out of money again, and I was desperate, and I didn't know what to do. So I said, what the hell am I going to do? So I got a job, because I boxed and I bounced years ago when I was younger. So
you were like a doorman bouncer, weren't you, or something like that?
Yeah, at a club, at a very exclusive club in Beverly Hills. And I was there, for about three or four months. And one night, this guy was trying to get in. He was really abusive to me and really nasty. And I tried to really say, look, you know, you're not getting in. And he said, you're going to be fired in 15 minutes. So I said, really? So I said, yeah, get online. Everybody tells me that. So as soon as 15 minutes went by, the boss comes out and he sees the guy and he goes, Swifty. And it was Swifty Lazar, who was the biggest agent in the world at the time. And I got fired in 15 minutes, just like he said.
Well, can I ask you a quick question, not to break your flow here, but why weren't you letting this bro... What didn't he have? Was he not a sexy girl, so he wasn't allowed in the club?
No, he was just nasty to me. He was in a rush, and he said, yeah, because I said, I'm sorry, I didn't recognize him. So I said, I'm sorry, so what is your name? And he goes, just let me in. Just open the pull the rope and let me in. And I said, well, wait a minute. Hey, listen, you. And he was just not nice. So when someone is not nice, I make them wait.
Yeah, yeah. Now, let me ask you, when you became famous, did you ever get any... Did you ever write a letter to Swifty Lazar? Did you ever get a little, like, a shiv in the guts to tell him, screw you?
But he died. He died.
Oh, he died too soon?
When I became famous, you know. So, and I got fired, and I went home, and I was so upset. I said, you know what, that's it. If they won't give me a great part, then I'll write one myself. And I got yellow tears of legal paper, and I started writing A Bronx Tale. And I would perform it at my theater workshop. I would write 10 minutes and then go back, write another 5 minutes. And after about 10 months, I had an hour and a half of this one-man show.
Fantastic.
That was like a movie. And then I did it. I borrowed money off my friend, lent me $25,000.
Wow.
A really good friend. And it just exploded. My life was in... Everybody, every writer, producer, director, star wanted to be in it, wanted to play Sonny. Every director wanted to direct it. Every studio wanted to make it. So they offered me $250,000 to walk away and because they wanted my story.
And you wouldn't take it?
I wouldn't take it because they wanted to put a star in my role and have someone else write it. I said no. Now, I had $200 in the bank, Rabbi. My hand to God, $200 in the bank. And then they said no. I said, well, then they said, forget it. And I kept doing it, and the crowds kept getting bigger, and the theater kept... We had to move into a new theater because it was the demand was too much. And then they came back and offered me $500,000.
I didn't realize that they doubled their... Are you still? Even what if they had said, you can do the script, but we still want to hire another actor, but you wanted it to be you all the way through?
I had to play Sonny, though. No way. I'm playing Sonny. I said, you know, I was an actor. I'm playing Sonny. I said, that's it. I'm playing this role. And and they said, no. Then I signed with William Morris then after that. Then about a month later, they tried to freeze me out. Then two other companies came in. It was like an insane bidding war with like three or four studios. And finally, the last studio called me in. I went in. They offered me $1 million.
But you had to walk away. In other words, it was $1 million on the condition that somebody rewrote the script and they cast somebody else as Sonny, and you said no?
That's correct.
God.
And I said no, because I remember my father, he always told me, the saddest thing in life is wasted talent. And I said, I'm not going to waste my talent. This is my shot. I'm going to do it. I mean, people in Hollywood, it's a legendary story. People in Hollywood thought I was crazy. They said, this guy, he's going to blow it. And then finally, about a week later, I get off the stage after doing it. And after I turned down $1 million, and somebody said that Robert De Niro is just saw the show, he's in your dressing room, he wants to talk to you. And I said, oh, wow. So I walked into my dressing room, and there was Bob De Niro. And he said, my God, this is the greatest one-man show I ever seen. He said, you did the whole movie on stage. You did a movie. I said, well, yeah, I know. I said, I think it'll make a great movie. He goes, yes. He goes, listen, I know what's going on. I know what you want. He goes, I'll tell you what, you play Sonny, you write the screenplay. He goes, you should write it because it's your life. He goes, I'll play your father and I'll direct it and we'll go partners. And if you shake my hands, that's the way it'll be. I shook his hand and that's what happened.
Did you have any trepidations over the fact that A, he had never directed a film before, and B, him playing your dad, you weren't that far apart in age, were you?
No, not at all.
So did you feel like,
No, you don't understand. I was playing Sonny. He was playing my dad.
Yeah.
We had to hire young actors to play me as a young boy.
Oh, okay. Oh, I got it.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So we had to hire young actors to play Little C and Big C. And I was going to play Sonny. But Colosio, who that's my real name, we had to hire young actors. No, he wasn't going to play my father. No.
Now I understand. Okay, I got a little confused there. Okay.
Yeah, so I was playing Sonny. He was playing my father, Lorenzo. And that's how the whole thing happened. And then, boom, my career was just took off after that.
And you have said very nice things also about Robert De Niro as a director. You're saying he's an actor's director and that he was really, really good to work with. Explain, please.
He was really great to work with because, first of all, people said, well, he never directed before. I said, well, the guy did, 60 movies, and he did a bunch of them with Marty Scorsese. He had to learn something. what was I casting? Joe Bag of Donuts off the streets? You know, come on. The guy was a big star. He was very smart. So I just said, I put my faith in him, and that was it. You know, I just believed that he knew the area. He grew up in a neighborhood like mine on Mulberry Street in the city. You know, so I knew he knew the milieu, the texture of the whole movie. So I trusted him, and it worked out great. I wouldn't change a frame.
When you came to him with your screenplays and various drafts, what were things that you may have argued about, or he said, oh, you know, you should really change this, and he turned out to be right?
You know, the great thing about him was that he wanted everything. He loved the screenplay because it was very, very close to the play, almost exact, and he loved it. He didn't want to change anything. It was a dream come true, I got to be honest with you, Rabbi. That really ever happens. But he trusted me. And the only thing, I think we argued, not argued, but we discussed a couple of things. I wanted Sonny and the boy to meet on the stoop, just like it was in the play. And he said, you know what, it should be a little more when one of the wise guys gets the kid and brings in Sonny. That seems better. And I said, oh, but it's this fable. And he said, and I trusted him. I said, you know what, he's right. In the play, it works. But if you did it in a movie, it would be a little strange, this wise guy sitting on a stoop talking to this kid. So he was right, and I agree with him for that, and it worked out really great.
Yeah, and people can see and rent A Bronx Tale, but if you don't want to do that, well, you can do that as well as seeing A Bronx Tale in Brooklyn for the very first time. You're going to be doing it, and people are going to be really excited to see Chaz Palminteri in his own one-man show. Did you ever have the desire, I don't know if there would be, but a sequel? Because so many people do that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, not really. No. I wanted to make a movie about how it happened. I have that in the works that I've been thinking about, that I've been writing a little bit about. But not really. You know, Bronx Tale 2, I don't know. I mean, the first 17 years of my life were so exciting that I don't know if I can match that with anything.
Well, it's like Gene Shepard writing A Christmas Story, and then they did another one. It just didn't have the same, it was the same sort of era, but it just didn't click again.
I have to tell people, the people who love, I don't want to tell this to your audience, if you love the movie, you'll love the show even more. And everybody says that. They go, my God, I love this movie, but I can't believe it. I love and I tell the story and play all 18 characters in a linear story without stopping, that people, Alfred Hitchcock used to say, there's only two things you could do to an audience. There's only three things you could do to an audience, excuse me. And he used to say, if you do two out of three, you're doing great. He says, you can make them laugh, you can make them cry, or you could scare them. Well, in Bronx Tale, I do all three. And it's really a ride that you'll never forget. It is a night in theater that you'll never, ever forget. I say that humbly, not bragging, I say it humbly because this will be my 857th show. And I got 857 standing ovations. So
Mazel, and let me tell you something. My friend Dave, who hosts this program, he, as I said, he saw it on Broadway back in 2007 and loved it. I mean, he sees a ton of one-person shows, and he's like, it's a special, this is, it's really a fine, as you said, it's cinematic in quality, it's really beautifully done. And it's one of the reasons we wanted to have you on this radio program.
Right. It was directed by Jerry Zaks, who's an 8-time Tony nominee, 4-time winner. So it's just a great show, and you never saw it, Rabbi, have you?
No, but Dave tells me all about it. We're very close.
You gotta come and see it, then.
Well, I'm in Colorado, but I would love to.
Oh, you're in Colorado.
If you fly me out to see your show, I will see your show. I would be honored. But, hey, speaking of a show, I read somewhere that a couple of years ago you were working on a new play called Humans.
Right. That's correct.
What's happening with that?
Yes, that's correct. Human is about...
Human, single.
Yeah,
yes.
It's about 2 years away. It's about 2 years away, because I'm working very, very, very hard on these other projects here. But I will get back to that, and it's a wonderful play. I really loved it. And
when you say you're working hard on other projects, such as?
Some of them I could talk about, some of them
sure.
I can't.
Okay.
I'm going back on Modern Family. I'm going back on Rizzoli and Isles.
Oh, yeah.
I've been doing Modern Family, and I love it. And I have a musical. One thing I can talk about.
A musical?
Musical of A Bronx Tale. A musical. I'm not in it. I am not in it.
Okay.
But a musical version of A Bronx Tale that the Broadway people are very excited about. So we'll see what happens with that.
Who's involved in that? What producers? What? Because I haven't heard about this yet.
Yeah, Tommy Mottola is producing it, and Bob De Niro and Jerry Zaks will be directing it.
What? They're both co-directing?
Yeah.
Interesting. So what's the time frame do you expect on that to happen?
Probably 2 years.
Wow. Interesting. Do you have but you're not going to be in it. Who's going to be you? Or they don't know yet?
They don't even guess yet. Right now we're just doing workshops.
Well, let me know because I intend to audition because I'm working on my Italian accent as we speak.
Oh.
It's not very good yet, but it will be. It will be in time, I promise you.
But kidding. It will be in time, okay.
Now also, speaking of people that you have worked with and dealt with and other movies and stuff. You are known also for a wonderful film called The Usual Suspects.
Yeah,
and you worked with
that. That was a great movie. That movie won the Academy Award for Best Script. And
was brilliant, yes.
Kevin won Best Supporting Actor. It was a wonderful film, yeah.
Did you have any, but I'd love to hear, and they don't have to be bad ones, they can be happy, really nice ones, but anecdotes about people, famous people like Kevin Spacey, or you were on stage with Al Pacino, John Goodman, Steve Buscemi, and Billy Crudup in The Resistible Rise of Arturo Uy, a Bertolt Brecht play.
I can give you a great story about that.
Please, yes.
One time we're doing the play, you know, and we all have these long monologues when we talk to Al, and I got this one scene where I have this monologue, and I'm ripping it up, talking to him, and all of a sudden the fire alarm goes off. We hear boom, boom. So now people who are there, they don't know. They think it's
part of the play, maybe?
Part of the play, right, exactly. And the fire alarm is going boom, boom, boom. And all of a sudden you hear the guy, everyone leave the theater, please, calmly. Now, all of a sudden Al Pacino's looking. And I keep going, and Al looks at me and goes, Chaz, it's over. Cut it. Cut it. I said, oh, so I stopped. And then we all leave through the back door, the exit door. Now we're all in costume and we're all out in the street with all these people. Pretty, pretty crazy, man. And then they said, okay, we can go back in. It's safe. And we all go back in and we picked it up right where we left off. It was kind of strange.
That's theater. That's what happens.
That's theater.
And you've done 857 performances, was it, of your A Bronx Tale?
Yeah.
Do you have any similar stories like that of having to stop in the middle of anything crazy, weird?
One time I was in Vegas.
Uh-huh.
And this guy who was in the first row, dead center, is on the cell phone. And he's talking loud. And I'm doing the show, and I let 30 seconds go by, and I could see people like really annoyed around him, and they're tapping him on the shoulder, and he's telling them to shut up. And then after about a minute of this guy talking, I go like this, Jimmy, because there was a character, Jimmy, in the play, and I go, Jimmy, get a baseball bat and crack it over his friggin' head, right? And the audience just cracked up. I said, this guy over here on the cell phone, this guy's this moron, get a bat and crack it over his head. But I stayed in character, the whole audience started laughing, he got up and walked out.
Oh, he got up and walked out. What a son of a bitch, if you'll pardon my, what a,
yeah, yeah.
People I do not understand with that. But, and here's another question that I wanted to ask you about. The role that you were Oscar nominated for was in the film Bullets Over Broadway. And you say about Woody Allen what most people who've worked with him on film say about him, is that he just kind of, he tells you, okay, this is the character, now go. Boom.
Yes, that's exactly correct. He doesn't really talk to you about the character or nothing. In fact, if he starts talking to you about the character, you're probably going to be fired. So people always go, oh my God, he doesn't talk to me. I go, that's good. If he doesn't talk to you, that means he's very happy. He loves what you do.
Well, it makes sense. Did you see the musical when it was on Broadway last season?
I did, yes, I did.
What did you think?
Well, I liked the character, the guy who played me. I thought it was terrific. You know, the guy who played Cheech.
Yeah, he was Tony nominated, as a matter of fact.
Nominated for a Tony, and he was terrific. He was terrific. I didn't think this. You know, I just thought it needed an original score. The songs were from the time period, and the songs just didn't elevate the play. You know, the written word. You know, I just thought it was okay.
And sometimes they even got in the way. Suddenly they're singing "Was Yes We Have No Bananas" for particular.
I just didn't. I don't know. It just didn't work for me, you know. But there were some wonderful people. I mean, the people were terrific, and the actors were terrific. But I just thought the play itself didn't explode. You know?
Well, actually, speaking of which, who's doing the score for A Bronx Tale, the musical?
Alan Menken.
Oh, my gosh. You know, he was on this radio program. I talked to him.
Did you really?
We can consider him a friend of the neighborhood because he was on this show about a year and a half ago. So give him my best. Tell him I said shalom.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. We are just a couple more quick minutes with the delightful Chaz Palminteri. Do you have any memories? We'll stay with the acting for a little bit, and then we'll go a little further afield. But any memories of what you were taught by Lee Strasberg?
Yes. Yeah. You know, I was very fortunate to study with Lee himself, you know, when I finally got into his class. At that time, I was in a band. And I was singing in a band, and I said, well, you know, Lee, I'm always like, I got to go out of town and work with the band. And he said, listen to me, Chaz. He said, you want to be an actor? You got to starve. You got to starve, Chaz. He goes, you can't, you know, you got to do one or the other. You can't, you know. And I never forgot that. And then finally one day I just said, all right, you know what, boom. And I devoted my life to just acting and writing, and that's when things started working.
But let's say, God forbid, but let's say the Bronx Tale thing didn't happen for you. How long would you have kept your hat in the ring slogging along as an actor? Would you still be doing it now if it hadn't clicked? Or might you have gone back to music?
It's funny, people ask me that, Rabbi, and I always tell them, I was going to make it. I knew I was going to make it.
Wow.
I knew it. I knew I was going to make it. There was no quitting. I mean, I didn't make it until I was 39, you know. But, and I have 200, imagine being almost 40 years old and having $200 in the bank. You know, I mean, that's not a pretty thing, you know, but I knew I was going to make it. Because I was successful. I got on the shows, I knew I was good, and I used that money to ran out of money, but I knew I was going to make it. I just knew it. You know, I can't explain the reason why I feel that way. I never thought about quitting. I just...
And thank God it's all gone wonderfully for you. Now I want to tell you something that may shock you a little bit, but I happen to be Jewish.
Yeah.
Just so you know, yes. You are a Roman Catholic, and I'm kind of curious does that have any effect on your life? What is there any piece that religion plays in your worldview or what you do?
Yeah.
Do you go to church, all that sort of thing?
Yeah, it's a great deal. I'm an extremely spiritual person. very, very spiritual. I think everything happens for a reason. When things do happen that are negative, I try to understand them and know and learn from them. And I try to realize that a part of pain is a part of life. Most people in life, most human beings, don't want pain.
Well, yeah.
But, you know, people don't want pain, whether it's physical pain or mental pain, especially mental pain. But the reality is you never learn from success. You only learn from the pain of failure. You really don't. You really do. You just only learn from failure. You know, when things are going right, what are you learning? You're just riding the wave, you know. But when the waves are not there no more, now who's the person who gets back on the surfboard and gets back out there looking for a wave? It takes work. So that's how I look at life, you know. When I know things go wrong, I say, okay, hang in there, and things will turn around. And they usually do.
Well, speaking of failure, what is your prognosis, and what do you think the Yankees should do to have a better 2015 season?
Well, I mean, the Yankees, I mean, first of all, the pitching on the Yankees has just been terrible. They're injury prone. The pitchers are older, you know, and they're beginning, and that's bad. I mean, you've got to have pitching. Look at the teams that won. I mean, look at Kansas City. Look at the Giants. Give me a guy on those two teams that hits 40 home runs. I mean, there's nobody. Nobody. I mean, so baseball has changed. Baseball has changed. Once the steroids went out of baseball, it's changed. You know, the home run leader was 40 home runs.
As opposed to 50 or 55 or 60 like they were getting when they were juiced, yeah.
It was like 5 years where everybody, there's like three or four guys hit over 60.
Right.
I mean, it was a joke. 58, 60, 62. Sosa and the other guy, Mark McGwire, it was like 3 years in a row. They both hit over 60. And then Barry Bonds at 75.
Right.
I mean, come on, Rabbi. Stop. So why is it now all of a sudden nobody can even hit 45?
It's true. It's
I made a mockery of the records, and I'm really upset by that. Because to me, Roger Maris is still the record holder. Hank Aaron is still the record holder.
It's true. Well, one of the people who was also on this radio program is a columnist for the New York Post named Phil Mushnick. And he's always hammering home about how ridiculous those stats are because, you know, they didn't mean anything. Everybody was you know, on drugs when they were making those records.
Yes, exactly. And that's why I really think a commissioner should step in and take those records away and say, look, the record is Roger Maris, 61. Hank Aaron, you know, 755. Really. And it's a shame because it's not right. It's not right, you know.
Well, speaking of something that is right, if somebody within this listening audience is hungry, and this is a hint here, and they happen to be in the Washington-Baltimore area,
yeah.
Can you recommend
an Italian restaurant? Yes.
Yeah.
It's called Chaz.
Chaz the restaurant. Does it serve good food?
Oh, tremendous. It's my restaurant that I opened with the Vitale brothers. It's 1514 Alisana Street. It's right in by the water, right by the water, Harbor East, and it's fantastic. And it's great, great charcoal pizza and great food, and you'll love it.
And some of it is kosher, so Jews can eat some of the dishes there. Like the pizza would be edible.
Oh, the pizza would be fantastic. I mean, come on. Well, now, what is a great Jewish food? Which is Jews known for when it comes to food? Not too much, right?
Now, well, chicken soup. Pastrami.
Chicken soup, pastrami, okay, and...
Borscht, maybe a little bit.
A little bit of borscht, yeah. I tasted that. You know what? That's pretty good.
Well, of course it is. Borscht with a little bit of sour cream, oh, it's like heaven.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I tasted that, and I really like sturgeon. I thought that was great.
Sturgeon, yeah, of course, Nova Lox. Oh, my God, that's heaven, too, on a bagel. Mm.
A little chopped liver.
See, you know more Jewish food than I do. You should have a Shabbos menu at Chaz the Restaurant in Baltimore, Maryland. But it has been an absolute joy and delight.
And November 23rd, Sunday, 3 o'clock, at the Brooklyn Performing Arts Center.
Sunday, November 3rd, 3 o'clock. No, November, excuse me. November 20, you said... 23rd, 3 p.m., the Brooklyn Performing Arts Center. Go, everybody, please, if you've never seen it or if you've seen it a dozen times, go again. Please see A Bronx Tale with our friend of the neighborhood, Chaz Palminteri. So what is your hope? What is your great goal, let's say, for 10 years from now? Last question for Jazz.
I want to keep doing what I'm doing. I want to be on a beach somewhere and, writing, continue with acting and writing. That's what I would love to do.
That's a pretty fantastic goal, and I hope to God that you achieve it. Chaz Palminteri, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you.
Shalom.